Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives. And, Jim, it wasn't that long ago where we were talking about President Obama's cynical attitude, and he's just basically killing time till he can hopefully get a Democratic majority in the House following the 2014 elections, because he just can't deal with these congressional Republicans, particularly in the House Republican majority. Maybe this charm offensive is a slightly different strategy. But according to Democrats, particularly Democrats thinking of running in Republican-held districts in the House, there's a problem on their way to a return to the majority, and that's Barack Obama himself. Apparently, he's so unpopular in these districts that these different moderate to liberal Democrats in these districts are basically trying to do rhetorical cartwheels to try and make sure that the people don't think that they and the president are locked in step for step on these key issues, where the president's position is ridiculously unpopular in these GOP areas. So while the president might think he's got the charisma to just will those 17 seats net over to the Democratic column, it looks like he's the biggest problem, which is kind of fun.
This is not a terribly different set of circumstances than what they expected in 2010. You'll recall Barack Obama saying to an Arkansas Democrat who was unnerved by the stimulus not working the way it was expected and the Obamacare debate. You remember Obama reassured him saying, "Well, the difference between now and 1994 is you've got me." Yes, they did. We saw what happened. So there you go. That's possibly the rerun of what we'll see here. And maybe a good example of this. One of the issues they mentioned in that article is gun control. It's one thing when you ask somebody, so do you support gun control or not? And the poll numbers are, they bounce around a little bit. Actually, the evidence of the country is becoming more skeptical of gun control and more supportive of a broad definition of Second Amendment rights. But a better way of looking at it is that in just the last couple of weeks after Newtown, we saw Martin O'Malley of Maryland, Andrew Cuomo of New York, and I believe there's one other Democratic governor. I guess in Colorado, they're pushing for a gun control initiative. Hickenlooper, I guess, is kind of hesitating a little bit. But particularly in the cases of O'Malley and Cuomo, two guys who allegedly have presidential ambitions, even though in the case of O'Malley, I guess the idea is that if a two terms of being a terrible mayor and two terms of being a terrible governor, he really believes he has what it takes to be two terms of a terrible president. Martin O'Malley has seen no bump in his numbers and, in fact, a slight slide in his approval numbers. Same deal for Cuomo. By the way, I nearly said Mario Cuomo to observe. This is why we probably should not have hereditary offices in politics, which is kind of foreshadowing our third martini today.
Yes.
The answer is that, on the gun issue, different voters believe positions at different levels of intensity. And most gun owners are diehard, the Second Amendment is the issue they vote on. And in races in which the Second Amendment is not a particularly strong issue, or the two issues have a similar point of view, they're much less motivated to show up. If you have a pro-gun ownership lawmaker up against a pro-gun control lawmaker, then they get excited and then they get motivated. So the idea of the White House going around and beating the drum on gun control is really not going to help them in the districts they need to do that. But again, I think this is a little bit of a reflection of Obama being in a bubble and believing that he is popular everywhere he needs to be, when in fact you look at the House results, he isn't. And I don't think emphasizing gun control and the issue, the article had suggested gay marriage, and I think even this kind of this general partisan, I hold a pep rally everywhere I go. Tone. I don't think it's going to help Obama where he needs to be. And, the other interesting thing is this whole article clearly was written before Obama's slide in the poll numbers. That he has had a dip in his numbers, looking at Gallup and Pew and some other places since sequester kicked in. So, the entire conventional wisdom about Obama's popularity may be shifting underneath our feet.
And just as a public service announcement to those of you who may have been taken in by moderate-sounding Democrats in 2006 and 2008, the two likely Democratic candidates who are quoted in this article, let their vagueness be a warning for you. One is Jim Graves, who actually lost narrowly to Michelle Bachmann last year. He's probably going to run again. His quote, "I think the tone coming out of the White House could probably be more conciliatory. There's no question President Obama's taken a fairly liberal tack in his second term, but I'm not here for the president. I'm here for the people of the 6th Congressional District." Never actually said he opposed any of it. This guy in Arkansas, State Senator Bruce Malach, says, "I'm an Arkansas Democrat. I would probably not go as far as the president on some of those issues. So talk about verbal gymnastics. If you don't get a hard and fast no from your candidate, don't even give them a second look. And if they do give you a hard and fast no, dig even deeper, because we got burned pretty badly and got a lot of bad stuff when the Democrats ran everything in Washington. So do your homework, folks.
I irked my friends in the NRA back in, you know, probably late 2010 by arguing that there was no such thing as a conservative Democrat. Now, the NRA's attitude is, if you're a good Democrat on gun issues, they have no problem endorsing you. They've had guys like Keith Schuller, who has since departed the House, and I believe Joe Manchin spoke at their convention a few years ago. That's fine, but my attitude is that when push comes to shove, these guys always fall in. Just enough of these guys fall in with the leadership of their party to pass the bills that the leadership needs passed. We all remember Nancy Pelosi's suicide squad on the Obamacare vote, almost all of whom ended up losing their seats back then. Joe Manchin, for example, was one of the first guys to go on Morning Joe after Newtown and say, well, the circumstances totally changed. It's time to look seriously at gun control. And then, of course, he went back to West Virginia and said, no, I didn't really mean that. I'm not talking about banning anything. And then he goes back into Washington and he says, well, I haven't judged, you know, Dianne Feinstein's assault weapons ban bill. You know, like, look, there's a two-step dance going on, folks, and you really should not be all that fooled by this. If you're a moderate Democrat, you know, read the fine print carefully, because these guys tend to basically figure out, well, whether do they need me or not? Can I afford to be bucking my party on this issue? And, you know, notice how rarely Nancy Pelosi ends up all that disappointed when she was Speaker.
Yes. Yes. Very good point. She always had just enough, and that's not by accident. All right. On to martini number two now. And let's just say the first major overseas trip for Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. Not exactly going as well as he would have thought. The press conference between him and Hamid Karzai was canceled, perhaps because they had very little nice to say about each other. The Afghans blamed it on us. We blamed it on a security threat. Hamid Karzai is now saying that we're in cahoots with the Taliban, something he promised to actually do, be in cahoots with the Taliban when he didn't like what we were doing a few years ago. He, of course, is as corrupt as the day is long. We've got more news of enemies infiltrating our forces and killing at least two Americans in this latest incident just in the last 24 hours. So this responsible wind down, really going well, Jim.
I'm always tempted to put some sort of, you know, Chuck Hagel still studying this issue type one-liner here, but unfortunately, circumstances are grim enough that I'm going to skip the jokes and just observe that if you didn't feel good about our involvement in Afghanistan before, nothing we're seeing right now should make you feel that much better. It sounds like that we still have Afghan, basically Taliban or anti-Western infiltrators turning their guns on their U.S. trainers and other Afghan troops on a regular basis. Karzai, I think we can, you know, conclude is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs and paranoid and you know, certainly an ingrate when it comes to all the aid that the United States has given his country. It's now fair to ask what there is left that we can do and what we can how much influence we have on the ground there in Afghanistan. It has now been 11 years we're heading into involvement in that country, and I think that a lot of us kind of feel like at this point, why are we spending more blood and treasure? It's not that the cause isn't just. It's not that our men aren't fighting valiantly and with great valor. It's just a question of, do we have an ally we can trust and we can rely on the ground there? And, you know, the more Karzai opens his mouth, the more that comes up that looks very debatable. So we will see if this causes a speed up of withdrawal of troops in Afghanistan. It certainly seems like Hagel's the kind of guy who would be urging that course of action. But we will see. Certainly not a flawless rollout for Chuck Hagel in his first tour as Secretary of Defense.
No, and just tragic again that we can't seem to solve these problems that are costing us American lives over there. On to martini number three now. And Jim, was just last week when we were laughing a little bit about Newt Gingrich not ruling out a run in 2016, and you said, book deal coming out, then you can get possible presidential candidate Newt Gingrich on your show. Right now, Jeb Bush is getting a lot of attention for his immigration reform book, and I'm pretty sure it's not because the interviewers are all that excited about his views on immigration reform, although that is getting some attention since he's altered his position a bit on the pathway to citizenship. But the question he keeps getting all the time is, are you going to run in 2016? And unlike 2008 and 2012, he's saying he hasn't made that decision yet, and so is obviously is prompting more questions. He was on at least a couple of the Sunday shows yesterday, one of which was Fox News Sunday, and Chris Wallace asked a very fair question, saying, you know, your brother left office with not very high popularity ratings. He's still a little bit underwater, although those numbers have improved, which led to this exchange.
Do you think that there is any Bush baggage? Do you think that would be a problem?
No, I don't think there's any Bush baggage at all. I love my brother. I'm proud of his accomplishments. I love my dad. I am proud to be a Bush. And if I run for president, it's not because of something in my DNA that compels me to do it. It would be that it's the right thing to do for my family, that the conditions are right, and that I have something to offer.
Now, Jim, I think George W. Bush gets a lot of unfair coverage. There are certain things that we as conservatives were frustrated about, immigration being one of them, spending control being another one. But he got pilloried for so many things that were very unfair. Nonetheless, it's pretty hard to argue that there's no Bush baggage or even Bush fatigue out there, and the idea of three people from the same family being president three times out of five presidencies.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. On the one hand, you totally understand why Jeb Bush has to answer that question that way. He can't say, you know, my brother screwed up a whole lot. I've always been telling him this since he was little, and I'm just going to have to clean up the mess that he let. No, he can't say that, obviously.
Right.
So obviously he has to defend that, but because he can't be expected to be – look, it is not – you know, McCain had disagreements with Bush. Romney had disagreements with Bush. And I think if we talk about the hopes and dreams of a resurgent and revitalized Republican Party, a lot of it's going to have to involve a serious examination of what the decisions made in the Bush administration, everything from TARP to intervention in places like Iraq and Afghanistan to – the big spending that was going on under there to kind of a slackening of pork barrel keeping an eye on pork barrel spending to the Abramov scandal. I mean, you know, there's a real argument to be said that the Republicans in Washington lost their way during the Bush years. And it doesn't mean that George W. Bush is a bad man or he didn't have his heart in the right place and all, you know, but it just means that we as a party need to be able to talk about this honestly. And if Jeb Bush is our standard bearer, we're not really going to be able to do that. And, you know, Jeb Bush has been a phenomenally successful governor down in Florida. He, you know, did a fantastic job of improving the state schools. There's a lot to be said about Jeb Bush. But if he runs, that four-letter last name is going to define it. It's going to mean relitigating all of the fights of the Bush years. And so as much as, you know, if you gave me a magic wand, I could wave my hand and instantly replace Barack Obama with Jeb Bush, I'd wave that wand in a second. But because that's not an option, and because we'd have to end up trying to get Jeb Bush elected, he represents a problematic choice for Republicans heading into 2016. So sorry, Governor, there is some Bush baggage, even though you clearly don't want to hear it, and I don't begrudge you not wanting to hear that.
Yeah, if his name was Jeb Smith, wasn't related, and had the same record from down in Florida, it'd be a much different ballgame. But
Greg, has he contemplated changing his name? Because, you know, Jeb Smith, that you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington. It's just a great, you know, great option there. And maybe he just grows a mustache or something that kind of, you know, just go in disguise and just, you know, see if anybody notices him. And maybe then he could succeed.
Might be a tad late for that, but it's good to see you thinking outside the box, Jim.
There you go, Greg.
We always appreciate that. Have a great start to the week. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.